ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जानशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। सो लास्ट टाइम वी स्पोक ऑन द फर्स्ट टेक्स्ट धृतराष्ट्र उवाच धर्म क्षेत्रे कुरुक्षेत्रे समवेता युयुत्सवः मामकाः पाण्डवश्चैव किम् अकुर्वता संजया। एंड आई एक्सप्लेन टू यू द बैकग्राउंड ऑफ द फर्स्ट वर्स हाउ धृतराष्ट्र हु इज not only physically blind but who also chooses to be blind not only to the activities of his sons but also chooses to be blind to what is happening on the battlefield. When he hears that the battle has taken a turn for the worse for his side, he knowing that Bhishma has finally, after lying on the bed of arrows, has given up his body, finally wakes up because he realizes that now a critical part of the battle is over. And he wants to know, how is it that despite having a stronger army, which is five times the size of the Pandavas, despite having the protection of Bhishma, how is it that still the battle could have turned against the Kauravas? And thus he calls Sanjaya, and Sanjaya begins to tell him what happened on the battlefield of Kurukshetra and starts reciting to him what happened on the battlefield right from the beginning. Sanjaya Vacha Drishtva Tu Pandavanikam Vyuddham Duryodhanastada Acharyam Upasangamya Raja Vachanam Abravit. Sanjaya said, O King, looking over the army arranged in military formation by the sons of Pandu, King Duryodhana went to his teacher, Dronacharya, and spoke the following words. So he is beginning by describing first, before describing what Arjun did, he is describing the matter of greatest interest to Dhritarashtra, which is what did his own son do on the battlefield of Kurukshetra? And how did he start the battle, and how was he at the beginning of the battle? And how did things come to this pass? And therefore he describes how Duryodhan comes before his teacher and begins to address him. Pashyaitam Panduputranam Acharya Mahitam Chamum Vyudham Drupada Putrena Tava Shishena Dhimata. So Duryodhan is speaking to Dronacharya, and Dronacharya is the teacher not just of the Kauravas but also of the Pandavas. And he tells him that, O my teacher, O Guruji, please look in front of you at the great army assembled by the sons of Pandu, and points out to him that they have been so expertly arranged in formation by the son of Drupada, his intelligent disciple. In fact, what he is really telling his teacher, Dronacharya, is that you are now facing not just an enemy, you are facing an enemy that has been trained by you. And this enemy which has been trained by you is now in formation and before you. We already know, as we will go on, we will realize that the army of the Kauravas is many times the size of the Pandavas. But still he says, behold this great army. And he also says, take a look and see how your most intelligent disciple, the son of Drupada, how he has arranged this formation. Not only is he telling Dronacharya to be aware that he is fighting an enemy who already understands the mind of the teacher, having been trained by him, but he is also telling Dronacharya that, Dronacharya, since you are facing your own students in battle, I don't want you to be weak-hearted. I want you to steel your heart. I want you to be hard-hearted when you are fighting your own disciples whom you have so expertly trained, who are so intelligently guided by you and who have been so dear to your heart. These people are now facing you. So, beware. Savdhan. They know already what you have trained them in, so that they understand what you are going to think. And also beware that let there not be a moment of emotional weakness, because they are your students, and that you may have some attachment or emotional weakness because of your love for them. Just harden your heart and be ready and be careful, because they have been expertly trained by you. Atra Shura Maheshwa Asa Bhimarjuna Samayudhi Yuyudhano Viratascha Drupadascha Maharatah. Here in this army are many heroic bowmen, equal in fighting to Bhima and Arjuna, great fighters like Yudhana, Virata and Drupada. So he is cautioning him and he is making him aware of all these people who are on the battlefield before him, and this goes on for the next few verses. Drishtaketus Chekitanaha Kashi Rajascha Viryavan Purujit Kuntibhojascha Shabyascha Narapungavaha. So the great heroic powerful fighters like Drishtaketu, Chekitana, Kashiraja, Purojita, Kuntibhoja and Shaibya, the mighty Yuddhamanyu, the very powerful Uttamauja, the son of Subhadra and the sons of Draupadi, all these warriors are great chariot fighters. But, my dear teacher, O best of the Brahmanas, let me tell you about the captains who are especially qualified to lead my military force. So having declared who is on the enemy side, Duryodhan now is telling his teacher, so they may have so many skilled and brave and powerful warriors, but now see who is there on my side. Bhavan Bhishmascha Karnascha Kripascha Samitinjayaha Ashvatama Vikarnascha Somadattis Tathayavacha. There is Bhishma, Karna, Kripa, Ashvatama, Vikarna, the son of Somadatta called Bhurishrava, who are always victorious in battle. Anyache Bahavashurah Madarthe Tyakta Jivitah. There are many other heroes who are prepared to lay down their lives for my sake. Nana Shastra Praharana Sarve Yuddha Visharadaha. And they have got all kinds of weapons and they are all very skilled in the art of battle. And then he says, Aparyatam Tat Asmakam Balam Bhishma Bhirakshitam paryaptam tva idam etishan balam bhima bhirakshitam. Now it's very ironic because at this point of time when Sanjaya is reciting to Dhritarashtra, he is explaining to Dhritarashtra that your son Duryodhana, when he started the battle, we are now at a juncture when Bhishma has passed away, when Bhishma is no longer living. But when he was starting the battle, Duryodhan was very complacent and he was very sure that nothing could happen because they were protected by grandfather Bhishma. Aparyaptam tadasmakam. What he is saying is, our strength is immeasurable. Aparyaptam tadasmakam. Our strength is immeasurable. Balam Bhishma abhirakshitam. Why? Why is our strength immeasurable? It is immeasurable because we are protected by Bhishma. In fact, in short, Sanjaya is also telling Dhritarashtra that, my dear Dhritarashtra, just like you thought that the battle was already won before it was started because you felt that Bhishma was on your side, so also your son, when the battle was about to start, he also thought that the battle is won because why should it not be won? Our strength is immeasurable because we are protected by Bhishma, who now, when this is being told, is no longer living. And that's why Dhritarashtra has agreed to listen to the what has transpired from the time the battle began until the death of Bhishma. And just as Duryodhan was overconfident that they would be protected by Bhishma, he also underestimates the Pandavas by saying that their protection comes from Bhima. And because Bhima is protecting them, their protection is limited. Now what he doesn't understand is that, of course, they're protected by Bhima. But more important is that they're protected by Krishna, because Krishna is on their side. And because Krishna is on their side, their protection, their strength is immeasurable. And because Krishna is not visible as a fighter on the battlefield, they think that they're sure to win. I mean, this always happens when people are overconfident of their strength, when people are engaged in wrongdoing, when people are engaged in adharma, when people are engaged in creating all kinds of terrible things. They think that because of their strength, because of their protection, because of their power, because of their status, because of their wealth, because of their influence, because of their political position, because they occupy the throne as Duryodhan did, that they are protected. But they do not realize that when you engage in adharma, a very simple thing happens. For when someone is engaged in adharma, Krishna is no longer on their side. And Krishna is on the side of dharma. And when Krishna is on the opposing side, it doesn't matter what is your strength, it doesn't matter that you are occupying the throne, it doesn't matter that you have an army 5 times the size, it doesn't matter that you are protected by Bhishma, it doesn't matter how powerful you are, that you have the guru of all that they have learnt on their side. You know, if you look at it, everything was on his side. He had Bhishma Dev, he had the his teacher who taught the Pandavas how to engage in battle. He had the throne, or he had the political position. He had an army that was 5 times the size of the Pandava army. And all these things seemed to be in his favor. But the one thing that was not in his favor was that he was guilty. He was guilty of adharma. And being guilty of adharma, he could not see that Krishna was on the opposite side. And that the protection of the opposing forces were really the strength and the power of Krishna that was acting through them. And because Krishna was acting through all these people, because Krishna was protecting them, their fate and their doom was already sealed. We'll go on later in the Bhagavad Gita, and later in the Bhagavad Gita actually you will see that Krishna gives a Divya Drishti to Arjuna. And he says, I give you Divya Drishti, behold, see, all the Kauravas are already dead. Now it's your decision. Do you want to be a hero and kill them? Or do you want somebody else to be a hero and kill them? Because already these people are finished. They're finished because they have acted for a dharma. Therefore, even those who act for dharma, let them be smaller in number, let them be apparently outnumbered, let them apparently have all the forces of the throne or political power against them, let them have Bhishma and let them have Drona and let them have everyone against them, because they are acting on the forces, they are acting as the forces of adharma, because they have got God on the opposite side, they are already finished.
Ayaneshu cha sarveshu yatha bhagam avastitah bhishman eva birakshantu bhavanta sarva evahi.
All of you must now give full protection to Grandfather Bhishma. As you take your respective points of strategic entrance into the phalanx of the army,
tasya sanjayanan harsham kuru vriddha pitamaha simha nadam vinadayocha shankham dadhmau pratapavan.
Then Bhishma, the valiant grandsire of the Kuru dynasty, the grandfather of the fighters, blew his conch shell very loudly, making a sound like the roar of a lion, giving Duryodhan great joy. So, you know, on this battlefield, the entire focus is on Bhishma, because they believe that Bhishma is Bhishma Pitamaha. He is the grandsire of the dynasty. And being the grandsire of the dynasty, anyone whose side he takes up will automatically win. And because of Bhishma's presence, he feels that they are bound to be protected and they will win. And he warns all, Duryodhan warns all the people that every assistance and every protection should be given to Bhishma, because Bhishma is the most important person on the battlefield. And if he can protect Bhishma, then Bhishma's moral strength, they know that they are morally finished. They know that they have absolutely no dharma left within them. So when they have no dharma left, when they have no, their conscience troubles them and they think that they are finished, they have no moral strength to fight, they take that moral strength from the presence of Bhishma. And therefore they ask that Bhishma should be protected. And Bhishma, he sets the stage for the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Again, I am reminding you that Bhishma is already dead. He has already passed away when the story is being told, and that's why it's being told by Sanjaya. And yet, he shows how at the beginning of the battle, all hopes lie in Bhishma, and how Bhishma's presence is taken by them as the ultimate moral support. They are not able to see that Krishna or God is on the other side. And when Duryodhan declares to everyone that, behold Bhishma, protect Bhishma, Bhishma blows his conch shell to announce his presence and his readiness for battle. And when he blows the conch shell, which sounds like the roar of a lion, Sanjaya tells Dhritarashtra that Duryodhan got great joy. He got great joy. Tatha shankascha bhairyascha panavanakaha gomukham sahasaya vaba hanyanta sa shabdas tumulo abhavat. After that, the conch shells, drums, bugles, trumpets, horns, everyone began to sound them. And the combined sound was tumultuous. It was a very noisy sound that was made. Because everyone cheered by the fact that Bhishma has blown his conch shell, also began to beat their drums and blow their trumpets and their conch shells. On the other side, Sanjaya says, both Lord Krishna and Arjuna, stationed on a great chariot drawn by white horses, sounded their transcendental conch shells. You can see here the actual words that are used. He says, Tatha shvetair hayar yukte mahati syandane sthitau madhavah pandavaschaiva divyau shankhau pradhadmatuhu. So what is the key here is that Arjun and Krishna blow the conch shells, which he says are divya, which are divine, which are transcendental. They blow the divine conch shells. Describe that, you know, Krishna and Arjuna, many places they have compared it to the sages Nar and Narayana. And here he describes that when they blow their conch shells, all the other conch shells, all the other things make a great noise. But here, when they sound their transcendental conch shells, right? Krishna blew the conch shell called Panchajanya. There's a whole story behind that, how he acquired that conch shell. And Arjun blew his, the Devadatta. And Bhima, the voracious eater and performer of Herculean tasks, blew his terrific conch shell called the Paundraha. And Yudhishthira, the son of Kunti, blew his conch shell as the Ananta Vijaya. And Nakula and Sahadeva blew this Sughosha and the Manipushpaka. The great archer, the king of Kashi, the great fighter Sikhandi, Rishtadyumna, Virata, the unconquerable Satyaki, Drupada, the sons of Draupadi and others, O kings, such as the mighty armed sons of Subhadra, all of them blew their respective conch shells. And the blowing of these different conch shells became uproarious, vibrating in both the sky and the earth, and it shattered the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra. He says, Saghosho Dharatarastranam Hridayani Vyadharayat Navascha Prithivim Cheva Tumalo Abhyanudayan. So the blowing of the different conscious became uproarious and vibrating in the sky and on the earth. It shattered the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra. Critical point here is that Krishna and Arjun blow divine conch shells, and so do they followed the rest of the Pandavas blow their conch shells too. And the result of this is that this blowing of these conch shells shatters the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra. And why are their hearts shattered? Their hearts are shattered because they know that they are on the wrong side. They know that they have been performing adharma. They know that they have done everything that is wrong. They know that they are the oppressors. They know that they have committed sin. And they know that with the blowing of these conch shells, their day of reckoning has come. You know, even if the wrongdoer makes a big noise, puts up a brave face, gives many courageous utterances, when he hears the voice of people who have come to battle their adharma, in their heart of hearts they tremble. Consciously they may be proud and they may be courageous, but they have a deep unconscious fear within them, because they know that they are wrong, and they know their time has come, and they know that they are finished. At that time, Arjuna, the son of Pandu, seated on the chariot, bearing the flag marked with Hanuman, Kapidhwajah, this is the word, took up his bow and prepared to shoot his arrows. O king, after looking at the sons of Dhritarashtra, drawn in military array, Arjuna then spoke to Lord Krishna these words. So Arjun, who is the son of Pandu, right, seated on a chariot, earlier he has stated that the chariot was a chariot drawn by beautiful white horses. He has also pointed out that they have transcendental conch shells. And here, why is all this important? Because if you go back, you know, the Bhagavad Gita is really a distillate of the Upanishads. And I will be pointing out to you as we go on, what are the parts of the Bhagavad Gita which are directly drawn from which Upanishads. And a good part of the Bhagavad Gita is drawn also from the Katha Upanishad. And in the Katha Upanishad, it is so clearly stated, right, that Atmanam Rathinam Viddhi Shariram Ratham Evatu Buddhim Tu Saradam Viddhi Manah Pragraham Evacha Indriyani Parani Aur Vishyam Steshya Gocharan. He points out that your body is the chariot of your soul. Your soul is seated on a chariot, and that chariot is your body. And intelligence is the charioteer. The mind are the reins, and the horses are the senses. And the paths of the world and the objects of the senses in the world, they are the paths on which this chariot must travel. And one whose intelligence is divinely guided, one whose mind is effectively restrained, one whose senses are controlled, that chariot goes tad Vishnu paramam padam, that chariot goes back to God. But one whose intelligence is not divinely guided, whose mind is not controlled, whose senses are not restrained, such a chariot, the Katha Upanishad describes, goes to Narak, goes to hell. And very typically the battlefield here shows Krishna as the charioteer. He is providing the divine intelligence to control the mind, to restrain the senses. And Arjuna is the soul, the bewildered soul, who is seated on the chariot. So it's very, very important for you to realize that right exactly at this juncture when the chariot is brought into play, when Krishna and Arjuna are brought in, it is not just a stage of the battle of Kurukshetra. It's also a stage telling those who are reading this book that really this is about you. Because just like Arjun, you are seated on the chariot, which is your body. You also have an intelligence that is, as you study the Bhagavad Gita, being guided by Krishna, you have to control your mind, you have to restrain your senses, and you have to surrender to the charioteer. Krishna later says in the Bhagavad Gita, and I have told you this innumerable times, Ishvara sarva bhutanam hride deshe arjuna tishtati brahmyan sarva bhutani yantrarudani maya. This is again, he is reflecting the knowledge of the Kathopanishad. He says, Ishvara sarva bhutanam hride deshe arjuna tishtati brahmyan sarva bhutani yantrarudani maya. You are seated on a machine made of material energy. This body which you have, this body which you inhabit, the body which you are riding in is your chariot. It's a machine made of material energy. Yantra. And he says, I am seated in your heart and I am guiding you onward towards your destiny. Just like Krishna is guiding Arjun. Sometimes people tell me, you know, that it was very easy, you know, Krishna was there, he was a charioteer, he told Arjuna, do this, do that. So obviously God is there in front of you and telling you, simple, just do what he says. But God is also with you, my friend. He is with each and every one of you. God is seated in your heart. And if you can quieten your mind, if you can silence your mind, if you can still your mind, and you can listen carefully, you will hear the voice of Krishna in your heart. You will intuitively know what you need to do. God will intuitively guide you. If you are able to cut out the noise from the world, it's very important to cut out the noise from the world, you know. Even today, if you try to speak on a cell phone in the middle of traffic, while you're standing on the road with vehicles buzzing around you, people shouting and screaming, you may not hear the voice clearly even on the best cell phone. You need to take a break. You need to take, you know, a time out. You need to take a little time out. You need to get into a vehicle and raise the windows so that you can have silence. You need to get into a room which turns off the noise from the outside, so that you can hear the voice on the cell phone. So when you need to have peace and quiet to listen to the voice on the cell phone, how much peace and quiet do you require to hear the voice of God who is in your heart? You can't go through life never taking a break. You can never go through life without taking a time out and then say, oh, God is not there, what to do? Take some time out to hear His voice. Take a moment of privacy. Take a moment to find quietude. Take a moment to still your senses that are agitating for more and more and more and more. Take a moment to silence your mind, to surrender your ego, and listen carefully to the voice of God who is in your heart. And listen to what He says. Tameva sharanam gacha sarva bhavena bharata tat prasadat param shantim sthanam prapshasi shashvatam. And Krishna says, right, very clearly, surrender unto me who is seated in your heart. I who am seated in your heart, surrender unto me. Do what I tell you. Engage in the action towards which I am guiding you. And I will take you to peace, perfection and the supreme destination. So as Krishna is going to speak to Arjuna in this Bhagavad Gita, he is going to enlighten your intelligence Similarly, the Lord, just like He is seated in front of Arjuna, is seated within your heart. And your chariot is your body. And if you want to hear Him, you need to take some time out. You need to keep some time for reflection. You need to listen very carefully after surrendering your ego, after silencing your mind, after ceasing to giving your senses a break from the world. And in quietitude, you need to listen very carefully to the small, still voice within your heart. And you will intuitively perceive that voice within your heart. And when you hear that voice, you need to surrender to that voice by doing exactly what it tells you. Not passively surrender, but actively surrender by doing what He wants you to do. And if you can do that, you will attain peace, perfection, the supreme destination. We will take up the rest of this next time. Now I request all of you to please capture the image of Krishna in your mind's eye. Sit still with your spine erect, your neck and your back in a straight line. Put your shoulders back. Capture the image of Krishna in your mind's eye and close your eyelids. Let your eyelids become heavier and heavier and heavier. Let your eyelids become so heavy that you just can't raise them. It's as if they've been glued shut. In fact, the more you try to open them, the more tightly they close. You can try in vain to open your eyelids. And keep that image of Krishna in your mind's eye. Take a deep breath through your nostrils and leave it in a relaxed manner. Let your natural abdominal breathing take over and feel the cool, dry air as it enters your nostrils and feel the warm, moist air as it comes out onto your upper lip. Let your mantra ride your breath so that with each incoming breath and outgoing breath, the sound of Krishna's name echoes loudly and yet silently within your mind. Hey Krishna, hey Govinda, hey Murari, hey Nath Narayan, hey Vasudeva. O Bhagwan, O Krishna, O Paramatma who is seated within my heart, O charioteer of this chariot which is my body. Inspire me so that I may take some time out to hear you. Inspire me that I may take some break from the world to silence my mind, annihilate my ego, deaden my senses so that I may listen carefully to what you tell me within my heart. O Bhagwan, O Paramatma, guide me within my heart what I should do, what tasks I have to take up. Give me that strength so I may face the world, just like Arjun faced the battle at Kurukshetra. Give me your guidance, give me your strength. Give me your instruction and I shall follow it. And I know that if I surrender to you and do what you tell me, I shall reach and I shall attain peace, perfection and the supreme destination.
Please slowly take a deep breath and gradually open your eyes to see Krishna, and please be seated for the Aarti.